Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Maher Hedgley, and welcome to another episode of Business Beyond Borders, where we have made it our mission to talk to global experts, professionals, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from a variety of industries and fields as we tackle the many aspects of scaling an international business. Now, the aim here is to collect valuable insights and be able to share with you guys some in-depth knowledge so that you too can apply the winning techniques and strategies to go global and take your business to the world.
Hey, folks. Cynthia Dearen here. Welcome to the Business Beyond Borders podcast. I'm launching a special series of episodes over the next little while to keep you updated on how COVID-19 is affecting industries and businesses around the world and what this means for you. My guest for this episode is supply chain expert Tim Gray. Tim's firm, Profit Systems, works with business leaders in Australia and Asia to solve complex supply chain process problems. And today we're talking about how COVID-19 is affecting global supply chains and what we can do about it. Tim, welcome to Business Beyond Borders.
Thanks, Cynthia. It's great to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you today about coronavirus and what that means for the supply chain space. As you know, the disease is creating widespread chaos. What kind of things are you seeing in supply chain right now?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Many people, in fact, most people would be able to cite the, you know, lack of toilet paper and the country's interesting response. And there's some humorous and scary responses in the US regarding ammunition that I can't quote the validity, but it's a scary notion. A lot of people wouldn't be aware of is that many industries are actually seeing dramatic growth, not just the medical industries where there's obvious and clear requirements, but, you know, food and packaging as food is being pulled out of restaurants. It's getting heavier packaged to then go into supermarkets and people are buying more because people are at home more, et cetera. So there's dynamics that are changing that I wouldn't have anticipated that are causing real bullwhips and real pressure in a lot of parts of supply chain. So yeah, it's a fascinating time.
So you mentioned food. Are there any other sectors that you've seen that kind of development of, you know, burgeoning market as demand gets sucked out of a different part of the economy?
Yeah, there's some pretty obvious ones like, you know, face masks, sanitizers, et cetera. I'm really concerned about, for our public's health, on secondary medical supplies. Pantry filling of toilet paper is kind of humorous and a bit sad. But, you know, when it's things like Ventolin or other essential medicines that aren't made on shore and the supplies are run out and chemists can't tell you when they're getting more, that's a situation out of control. And it's not that the demand for Ventolin has gone up, you know, around the bushfires it would have. But now this is just people hoarding. And that's scary. You know, I live with my daughter is a chronic asthmatic. And, you know, to not be able to get access to medicines could be life-threatening. So there's some really disturbing aspects to this, what I'm calling a panic pandemic.
Yep, absolutely. And where you've got manufacturers and organizations that need big volumes of medical equipment at short notice, what are the biggest kind of challenges that they're actually facing?
There's two parts of medical industry, for all the right reasons, have an incredibly rigorous testing standard. So you can't just grab any face mask, and not being a doctor, I need to be careful here, but I suspect that there's probably there could be some more latitude on hand sanitizers or face masks for the general public. But when it comes to respirators or equipment that's ready for hospitals, you know, they seriously have to be up to the task. So actually getting something certified and approved for manufacturer or as an alternative product can take years. So if you don't already have your supply chain established and your alternative suppliers nurtured, you're in strife. Mm. It's one of the areas that I think that so many businesses are finding themselves deeply exposed is that they haven't, in chasing the almighty dollar and trying to be competitive, we've chased suppliers that meet the cost criteria or can offer a price incentive, and we've forsaken the better practices of actually nurturing alternate suppliers and having local suppliers to quickly respond to surges in demand.
And what do you see as the longer term consequences of those trends?
I have to hope, firstly, that now, and I think for the next year or two, I would like to think, you know, if the coronavirus was came to fruition or finishing tomorrow, I still think we'd have a couple of years where people would remember this situation and acknowledge the need for better planning. And we talk always to our clients about the need for foresight. Mm-hmm. And we must be looking into the future. And we also must run scenarios regularly about almost like war games of like, what happens if the exchange rate drops? What happens if this demand goes up? What happens if a new entrant into the market comes? Not, you don't want all of your time worrying about that, but you must have at least had a look at it and have consequences understood and response measures in place that you can activate at appropriate amounts of time. And I've seen just a lot of businesses have just become so cost focused that they're just interested in what's going to make me money, what's going to save me money, what's going to, and that's driving really short-term and not very robust or agile behaviors. And I think that I'm hoping what the longer-term solution will be is we'll remember the need to have geographically dispersed suppliers. We'll remember that you can't just afford to, even if you geographically disperse, but if your one supplier has 10 different factories, but you're their 101st most important customer, you are not going to get supply in front of the 100 other customers, you know, when supply is limited. So we must treat our supply lines like they're the blood in our veins, because they really are, if you want to stay in business. And we've forsaken that. So I'm hoping and I expect that we will see a transition back to continuity of supply planning and more rigorous reviews of our supply lines and making sure that we really do have the ability to flex up and down as demand goes.
Now, obviously, China's been very seriously affected by the coronavirus, and that's had a massive impact on its ability to supply to global markets.
Yep.
What kind of impact do you think we're going to see, or will we experience as a community, and what will business experience in the months that are coming as that the impact of that slowdown in supply makes itself felt?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. A lot of I've seen too many of my clients when I've been trying to establish comms with them, and at the moment it's very hard to get sensible conversations as businesses have their first response. For local businesses, has been, well, how do we get everyone to work from home? So business continuity planning hasn't been about the supply, it's been about IT. And how do we actually get people to work from home? And well, there aren't enough modems to go around. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but we're seeing mobile networks are getting jammed regularly that you can't actually get people on their mobile phones, which is something I wasn't expecting. And, you know, data allowances and all that sort of stuff are a redistribution of traffic is a very short-term issue that we're experiencing. Because of those issues, we can't even get many people on the phone. But what I am hearing, which is disturbing me, is that people that were placing orders, for example, for raw materials that they need for their factories in January and December, prior to the, you know, rushing in before the Chinese New Year, those factories were shut somewhere between 4 and 8 weeks. And their products should be leaving China now, right? Were due to leave China now. A lot of those products won't have even been built. The Chinese factories aren't ringing us up and saying, oh, by the way, that order you placed in January, yeah, we haven't got to that yet. Sorry, I know it's due there now. You can understand, because then we'd cancel the order and find somewhere else to place. Even they're trying to survive now that they've had a 4 to 8 week hole in their financial supply chain. So we're at the front of a real problem in most businesses. And at the same time, we've got companies like Mondelez and other and the large beverage suppliers and beer makers and so on are experiencing 20% increase in volumes. So the manufacturers in the middle who are waiting for the raw materials to come out of China or other parts of Asia are about to find themselves bitterly disappointed. So what I find even more interesting, and China is starting to move again, and they're getting stuff through their ports, and the ports are coming back online, and factories are coming back online, and have been for a few weeks now. Interestingly, China has been, I don't know if this is public knowledge or just anecdotal evidence, but from what I'm seeing, China's been, a lot of factories have been leaving China and moving to regionally close countries in over the border in Cambodia or Laos and relocating to Vietnam and so on, partly because of the trade tariffs anyway, the tariff war with the US, and partly because China's making a strategic move to promote higher value manufacturing and let go of the lower value manufacturing for places that are a lot cheaper. And so we're already seeing some geographic distancing of lower value products. And I think this is going to accelerate that further. It has to accelerate it further. So I think we're going to see a broader embrace of having sourcing particularly low value products, not just from China, but from the regions around Asia.
And in the short term, is that going to mean shortages of goods across the board?
Yeah. Already we're seeing that now, and we're seeing some customers just cannot buy things for love or money. I was quite interested to read that the headline said that a Western Australian billionaires just bought $150 million worth of medical equipment, or secured $150 million worth of medical equipment from China. And my first thought was, well, that's great. They've taken your money. I'm wondering when you're actually going to see those supplies. not wanting to be too pessimistic, but I'm wondering how he managed to get them when the US is buying the same equipment, Europe's buying the same equipment. I don't know, but I'd imagine Italy was in the market for that a week or two ago. So how did he manage to get in front?
So I've been watching what's going on in Europe, and I know that, for example, in France, they're about to start ramping up manufacture of ventilators, and they're looking to produce about 20 months supply over a period of in a week. So
yep.
Thousands of units produced in the time that it usually takes to produce dozens. Extrapolating that to other countries, what kind of opportunities do you think this halt in supply out of China might create?
I was really excited to hear that Detmold have just been awarded 150 million face masks. I, in my wildest dreams, didn't think that Australia would use 150 million face masks. And I'm not 100% sure if they're all for the Australian government, but the contract is with the Australian government. And that's a great sign. And I was also really pleased that deal was signed before New South Wales government even made the comment that they were going to look at reshoring tooling. So parts of Australia have been working pretty quickly on this. That's good. That's really good. And those opportunities will exist. We need to make sure that you're not going and building a factory to build hand sanitizer, and you can't pivot when the requirement for that dries, or the sudden surge in capacity just means that hand sanitizer's value drops to a cent a liter or something. So I think that, you know, everyone has to be very careful about over investing in a short-term need. But certainly to see the world mobilized like this is, it's pretty exciting. And you've got two camps. People are either looking at the world just saying, my job's finished, the industries that we know it have finished, and there's other people looking at it going, wow, there is opportunity everywhere. There are surges in demand that will continue, and there's spot opportunities right now. So it's a very, very interesting time, but you'd have to hope that we can capture market that makes sense and on products, and that stuff that we're good at and we geographically have an advantage to supply, and that we do that with enough foresight that we acknowledge those items that are a short-term trend and can utilize those skills in other areas. For example, you know, face mask demand is going to drop off. Those same sterilization and capabilities may be able to be used for hospital gown garments. And so, you know, stop us importing those. I don't know if we do import those, but that would be an example where you might take, you know, the base industry that you're able to afford could then lead on to other products and therefore make a long-term solution.
So if you look at this at a macro level, do you think we are likely to see a changed perspective on, or a changed manifestation of globalization at the end of the coronavirus period? Are we going to see, for example, more local manufacturing? What can you forecast?
I desperately hope so. I think, you know, we've seen America's been, I'm calling it a renaissance in manufacturing. They've been doing this for a while, not because of Corona, but because they were getting frustrated with dealing with the long lead times out of Asia, and, you know, starting to realize that cost, just the price per unit, is not the only cost you pay for having a long supply chain. There's an opportunity loss, and there's a cost to what we call a cost to serve. I think that the world is becoming very, very aware, and this is what I alluded to before. I think there'll be a couple of years from now that they will still be recent enough that people will acknowledge there is a desperate need to maintain an agility, which you can only do with some local supply. Now, whether the government incentivize that, whether business can find the reasons to sustain that, I don't know. But I do think that it's a fantastic time to readdress some of these industries that have gone for good. If we can reseed them again, my understanding is that the very best economies have always embraced manufacturing, understood they need to have a base of that. And in my experience, manufacturing is pretty much left Australia. And if we can use this opportunity to re-grasp and retool to bring a level of manufacturing back to Australia, I think Australia will benefit from it. And yes, so I'm a big fan of that. And I do think it's going to be a step change in globalization to realize it's absolutely fine to buy the cheapest products on long lead time from somewhere else in the world, but you can't afford to just have one supply line. You must also have local products to augment that. Even if you pay a higher price, the total cost to serve your supply chain will be less if you can have local surge capacity.
So with that in mind, what should supermarkets and chemists and other retailers who are dealing with this increased demand for essential items, what else can they do today?
Today, I think that there's been a really, really smart this implementation of limits, bio limits. It's naturally had a kind of behavioral calming of the storm. You know, it's very scary, like I was alluding to before, to go to three chemists in a row and find none of them have Ventolin and you've got a child who can't breathe. That's that, no one wants that. And for that to be managed by just a responsible merchant saying, look, I'm only going to sell you one because I've only got 10 left. That's fantastic. I applaud that. So I think that that's a really, for the immediate triage, that solves it. I think longer term, we must start looking at our supply lines. Like if on average I buy 100 units of these a week, or we consume 100 units a week, I need to have 10 or 20 or 50 have to be sourced locally because they can cover the surge. I can have, you know, 70 or 80% of that volume, depending on the volatility of your demand. I can have most of that volume coming in the cheap and slow, and, you know, I get one ship a month, but I must have some local capacity or I just cannot turn it on when I need it. You know, if something does happen to supply lines, if there are hurricanes or other pandemics or other issues comparable to this, then it's just too big a risk. I can't think of the last time when we've had this on so many fronts, you know, across the board, supply lines and you know, across the world. So.
I know you're really busy at the moment. Can you give me a sense of how your team at Profit Systems is helping companies out during this really bizarre time that we're going through?
Yeah, certainly, and thank you. It is a bizarre time, and there's two ways that we're helping. One, interestingly, is just rolling up our sleeves and helping anywhere we can, because we've just got companies that, particularly as they're working from home and they're trying to get answers to questions that haven't been asked of them before. So that can be anything from helping two of my clients do their budgeting right now because they just don't have, they're not used to this. They don't know how to cater for what's changing. And you know, one of my clients, their first response is no point in budgeting because everything's so moving. And my response is, no, you've got a budget. Yes, it'll be wrong. We know that. But you've got to have a baseline you can come back to. So that, and what we're going to do is, in fact, increase our forecasting, increase our planning cycles. They want to do less because they figured that, oh, well, I can't possibly guess the future now. And my experience response is, no, now's the time when we must double down. We must be checking every week what you'd previously do every month. And but just by exception. So we start, we have our baseline, and then we look at, well, what do we know at the moment? We know that food is increasing at 20% at the moment. We know right now there are, you know, consumption of things like hand sanitizer are probably at 10,000% growth. And by the way, frustratingly, and just as a footnote, some of the big manufacturers will not release the data on what the uplift has been. And I find that really offensive. And Woolies, for example, I was recently working on a big data program with them, helping restructure their data, and they won't tell me what uplift they're getting. The data's there for anyone in their business to be able to see, and they won't share that. I think this the mentality about data becoming a value in Industry 4.0 is just taking to extremes when we can't get information I think that we all need. Anyway, I digress. So yeah, we're helping the clients with their budgeting and forecasting and getting into the cycles of rapid understanding of what these changes mean to the business in different horizons. So it's new for a lot of businesses. They've been able to get away with, when it was business as usual, you can get away with not doing planning, but becoming more important than ever. So that's where we're spending most of our time, is just helping them embrace a new, more frequent, forward-looking, we call it foresight, you know, really working with foresight and taking your best understanding of what's happened in the past and projecting that forward.
Tim, it's been great to have you on the show today. Thanks for sharing your insights into what's happening with global supply chains right now during COVID-19. Any final thoughts for manufacturers, CEOs, other businesses who are listening to this episode of the podcast?
Yeah, certainly. Right now, there is tragedy going on, but there is also phenomenal opportunity. And I'd urge you, don't get caught up in the horrible situations that people are going through. We can construct a better way forward out of this that is good for all Australians by keeping our eyes firmly open for where there's a need, where we can fill the need, and acknowledging that the landscape at the moment is dynamic. But while we're servicing a need, particularly with manufacturing and supply chain capabilities, what we need today and tomorrow will be different from what we need next week, next month, and next year. But we still need those same skills. And we need those habits in place and capabilities to look after ourselves in time of need. So I'd urge you, and if we can do anything to help, please don't hesitate to reach out, because I'm all for doing what we can to help this great country get be dynamic and really be effective.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Tim.
Thanks, Cynthia. Bye for now.
Hi, everyone. This is Maher again. And just a few things before you head off. Firstly, if you feel you have gained valuable insights from the show, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss another episode. More importantly, don't forget to tell your fellow entrepreneur and business leader friends that this is the best podcast to tune into if they're looking to take on the world with their products and services. Also, if you are loving the podcast, please take the time to rate and review, as it's one of the best ways for us to get loads of free value into the hands of other entrepreneurs. And lastly, make sure to visit DearinAssociates.com. That's D-E-A-R-I-N Associates.com, where we have plenty of free resources and tools for you to get clarity and build momentum with your international venture. If you go there, you'll find the Blueprint to International Success, ebooks, our latest blog posts, and more. So be sure to check it out. And until next time, this is me encouraging you to expand your vision and wishing you all the best as you continue your global journey.